Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're going to check in on Hurricane Florence and its aftermath now. We haven't really talked about it on the show yet, and it's been 4 days since the hurricane itself hit the coast of the Carolinas. And though the hurricane has mostly moved on, the aftermath, as we've been hearing, is a whole storm of its own. Tens of thousands of houses are damaged. Floodwaters may not recede for many days to come. 32 people officially have died, and 2,600 people have had to be rescued from their homes. Our hearts are with those dealing with yet another disastrous, life-altering storm to hit our country. We have to have this sort of segment all too often, and we'll talk about some ways you can help. But we'd also like to open up the phones now and hear from listeners with connections to anywhere that was hit by Hurricane Florence. Do you have friends or family in the area? Maybe you're listening in the area. I know we get calls from North Carolina sometimes. What are you hearing or what are you experiencing? 212-433-WNYC. Put a human face on this. Tell us a story that needs to be told of yourself or anyone you know. 212-433-9692. And with me now to help take your calls and also to answer your questions about the storm and fill us in with more details in this still developing situation is NPR reporter Brakten Booker. He's been stationed in parts of North Carolina for the past few days following the storm. He's back in D.C. now. Brakten, thanks for giving us some time. Welcome to Just WNYC on the NPR network today. Hi.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So I see Florence set a record for North Carolina as far as rainfall totals for a single tropical cyclone. Can you give me some of the numbers? Because some of the ones I've been seeing in the press, I can hardly believe my eyes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the rain totals are pretty dramatic. And while I was there, it was weird to not see the sunlight for days on end, right? So I got down to the Greenville area where I was going to ride out the storm on Wednesday. And the sun was out then, but I didn't really see the sun again until probably Sunday afternoon or so. But yeah, some of the rainfall totals, I mean, they've gotten more than 2 feet of rain in some places. It was complete downpours, especially when Florence was blowing through on Friday, and people, when I was interviewing people down there, they were really tired of being kind of cooped up in their houses for such long periods of time. And even though officials were telling them, please stay in your homes, it's not safe to go out there just yet, people really just wanted to kind of get outside and really kind of take a peek out at, you know, the damage that they were seeing on TV when they were looking at television, at these at the press conference, and quite frankly the Weather Channel, when they're seeing folks outside kind of bracing themselves with the wind and rainfall.
I want to talk about Wilmington, which is a city of about 119,000 residents, the number I have, which has faced some of the most severe troubles in the past days. The routes connecting the city inland were blocked by floodwaters and debris. The airport and the shipping port were also closed. Are roads now open in Wilmington?
Well, officials say there is like a one singular road in and out of Wilmington, and it's not quite secure, right? They've been able to get in and cut down some of the trees and put the power lines back up, but really they're asking folks who have evacuated Wilmington to kind of stay out, because what they're trying to do is send emergency vehicles on these routes to get supplies into Wilmington. So I think the last official number that officials in North Carolina put out were 23 truckloads made it to Wilmington to get supplies there. But they are saying this road is really not stable, and while while it is not a closed road for public traffic, they're really, really encouraging people, if they don't have a real dire need to get into Wilmington, to really stay off the roads, because they're saying with all the rains and all the river runoff that is expected in the coming days, that road could be underwater again. And they really just want to try to minimize the damage and the casualty numbers from that.
How many people are evacuated?
We're getting numbers of something like 2,600 people have been evacuated so far. I don't have specific numbers on Wilmington.
Sure.
Altogether.
Whatever.
2,600 is the number that they're working with right now. I feel that number is probably going to go a little higher. And, you know, for those animal lovers out there, apparently 300 animals have been rescued as well. And they're saying that still portions of I-95, obviously the main interstate portions of that, are closed to traffic because of high waters, particularly in the Lumberton area in the southern part of the state. And parts of Interstate 40 are still closed to traffic. So in all, I believe officials said about 1,200 road closures as of yesterday are still taking place in the state. And one thing I got to note, too, it seems for people who aren't on the ground in North Carolina, that, you know, when they block off a road because there is flooding down the road, you know, out of kind of your eyesight, they do put these barricades around them, but they're temporary barricades, obviously, and so you can drive around them if you so choose. So officials are saying, please, please, please do not drive around these barricades. They are there for a reason, and they are really worried about having a number of cars be underwater and then having to send rescue teams to people who are trying to get down these roads that are impassable.
Isabel in Westchester, you're on WNYC with NPR's Bracton Booker. Hi, Isabel.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm listening to your show every day. My brother just moved to North Carolina a month ago from Virginia, and he had a tree aiming to fall at his house, and he went to look for help. But as you know, everything is flooded. The roads are washed away. When he came back, he found a whole bunch of neighbors cutting the tree to save his house. So he is so touched by the people, the kindness, the neighborhood, everybody coming together to help. And he could credit those people from saving the tree to fall into his house, because the soil is sandy. So all the trees are just falling all over the place. Hmm. That tree was going to cut his house in half. And he just moved there a month ago.
That's a wonderful story, Isabel. Thank you very much. I imagine, Bracton, that you're hearing a lot of stories like this, of neighbor helping neighbor, of stranger helping stranger, the best and unfortunately sometimes the worst, but definitely elements of the best of human behavior come out at times like these. Have you been seeing it?
Yeah, absolutely. And hearing lots of stories just like what Isabel was talking about. It is really about neighbor versus neighbor, right? I will tell you that most of the places that I was covering were places that Trump won in the election. But I will tell you, I didn't see anybody wearing any Make America Great Again hats. I didn't see really any Trump signs except for one in one county. But it looked like it had been out there for a while, and it was pretty washed up and kind of bent up. But I mean, there's no political lines when you're in the middle of a natural disaster, right? Nobody cares who you voted for. Nobody cares what you do for a living. Everybody is suffering at the same time. So if they see a neighbor that needs help or is in danger of actually seeing water going into their house, people go out of their way, even if it's putting their own life in danger, to help them out. There's one elderly woman that I met at a fire station in New Bern. She was in her house. She decided to ride Florence out, even though she tells me that her daughter, who lives in Greenville, about 40 miles away, really urged her to get out, and because New Bern sits right along the Neuse River, and it is prone to flooding. So she tells me that she wasn't going to get out because, look, it had never flooded that bad before. So she really wasn't worried that the floodwaters were going to reach her house. And a neighbor who was down the street knew that this woman was in her house, and he saw the water inching towards the house, and she has a little trouble walking, and he went to go get her, telling her, "You've got to go, you've got to go." So he said he lost his car in the flooding, but they were able to walk out far enough where the water was kind of just up to their knees, and they hitched a ride to the New Bern fire station where they were waiting to be taken to a shelter. But you hear stories just like this mm-hmm. all over when the storm was certainly coming through, and you hear stories about neighbors getting sandbags for the neighbors. It's just the community seems very resilient and used to this, but when danger strikes, they really want to band together to help one another.
And the politics recede, you're right. Nobody asked each other here in New York what their politics were on September 12th, 2001. Mm-hmm. September 13th was another story. But sort of to that point, in North Carolina, I heard something, maybe you can confirm this for me or refute it, that a law was passed in North Carolina somehow prohibiting projections of sea level rise to be taken into account in urban planning or in insurance or something like that. Is this something you know?
I'm not quite familiar with those laws in North Carolina, but what I can tell you is what I've talked to people about is how much flooding actually happens, particularly in this coastal Carolina place where I was. They're used to flooding, and just a couple of years ago, Hurricane Matthew came through, and a lot of people really were comparing Florence to Hurricane Matthew. So Hurricane Matthew had historic flooding as well from all the rivers and tributaries there, and a lot of people kind of based their decision on whether or not they were going to evacuate based on, you know, well, how high are the levels in Matthew? Okay, well, Florence is not projected to have those kind of flood levels, so I'm going to stay. I think that was the case, particularly in New Bern. A lot of people said, well, you know, it's a Category 1. We've been through Category 3s, Category 2s, and, you know, we made it through just fine. So a lot of people said they were planning to ride out the storm, and when they're looking out their first floor windows at night, because remember, Florence blew through in the middle of the night, the wee hours of Friday morning. And so I will tell you, it's hard to sleep when you know a hurricane is gonna blow over your head. So people were up. People were up kind of trying to watch the floodwaters. And one woman told me she had a flashlight and was shining it out her first floor door. And she said the water from the Neuse River came up to the sidewalk, and then it came up to the stairs of her porch. And they have elevated porches there because it floods there. She said once the water got to her door, she knew it was pretty bad. That means that it had to have at least 9 foot of storm surge. But still, she said she would ride out the storm again because she doesn't want to leave her home. That's her baby, and she really felt safe there.
And you say Category 1 lulled some people into a sense of complacency. This is kind of a media failure, maybe, because they always talk about a hurricane in terms of categories, which are really just wind speeds. And that doesn't tell you how bad the flooding is going to be, which is a whole other measure. So I hope the local media in that area got it right and were being specific enough with what the predictions actually were. But the categories of a hurricane really only measure wind, and they don't tell you about flooding, right?
Right, right. Now, I will tell you that counties from Beaufort to Pitt County to Lenoir County, they were all very aware of the flooding coming, right? It was kind of a double whammy effect. Once I got there, officials told me, like, yes, it's a Category 1, but a lot of people are going to be lulled to sleep because it may just be wind, but it is going to pack a lot of rain. And Florence was a slow-moving storm, as you can remember from some of the reports, but it just felt like it was inching along. So it was a Category 4 before it blew in. By the time it actually made landfall, it was a Category 1, but because it was moving so slowly, it just kept pumping rain. And then the waterways, officials predicted that the flooding, because of all the inland rivers and tributaries, they were going to flow over much later. And I think people kind of let their guard down a little bit once the storm passed and they could go out and see the damage. And they thought, well, maybe it won't be that bad. And now we're seeing kind of the after effects with some of the river flooding that's taking place now.
Listeners, who else has a story about North Carolina at the time of all this flooding? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll continue in a minute with NPR's Brakten Booker. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about the aftermath of Hurricane Florence, still affecting so many people, especially in North Carolina. By the way, here's confirmation on that sea level rise law that I mentioned briefly before I looked it up during the break. This is from Business Insider. It says in 2012, lawmakers in North Carolina banned the use of scientific predictions of accelerated sea level rise in coastal policymaking. The bill was supported by a business-backed consortium of North Carolina property owners concerned about property values. So there is that. Here's another heartwarming story from listener Liz, who tweets, "Pleased to report that my sister, who lives right on the water in Wilmington, is safe and her power has been restored. Friends who live there evacuated and can't get back home. My husband is deployed with the Red Cross in Durham and is working in shelters there." And I want to ask you about that, Brakten, for people who want to help. I guess, you know, they always say sending money is the most efficient way to help in a disaster. Are there some leading charities that are very focused on there? And are there particular groups of people who need particular kinds of help?
Well, I think the biggest thing right now is certainly clothes and supplies for when folks are able to rebuild. Certainly, Red Cross is leading a lot of efforts down there. We went to a couple of shelters and they were each giving people two blankets per cot, and that's probably the leading charity down there. There are some local charities too that I have not spoken to, but that are leading the efforts there. Mm-hmm. Can I touch on one thing that
sure.
you said before the break? You made the mention about the complacency, and I think that's come up a lot. Certainly, local officials on the county level are trying to fight against the complacency, because this area where I was in the Greenville area, in Kinston, in New Bern, in Washington, North Carolina, there, since they're so prone to flooding, people just don't think it's going to happen. And I also think that, you know what, I live high enough that we've never seen floods get to that level. And so that's kind of the main charge that local officials are trying to tell people, like, this is coming. I think Governor Roy Moore yesterday called, you know, between the flooding with Hurricane Florence and Hurricane Matthew, that they were two 500-year floods that happened 2 years apart. So he's saying it's pretty clear that they're not 500-year events anymore. What I will also say is that, you know, housing moving forward is going to be one of the biggest challenges for these hard hit areas in North Carolina. Unlike Hurricane Harvey in Houston, Houston has lots of apartment buildings, has lots of places for rentals. You know, places like New Bern and Greenville, these are not very big population centers. They don't have large apartment complexes. So it's going to be very difficult to find places to live. And some officials are even thinking about bringing back temporary trailers for people to live in if it comes to that. So really, the biggest challenge is, where are you going to house some of these, you know, 14,000 people that are currently in shelters if they can't get back into their homes?
Yeah, so this is definitely an ongoing story. And I guess, and we just have 15 seconds, but it's a story of disparate outcomes among rich versus poor, right?
Yeah, yeah. Certainly it's difficult on low-income residents, but one temporary change that North Carolina is making is that they're allowing folks who have EBT cards they can purchase hot food. So typically with nutrition benefit programs, mm-hmm. you can only buy cold food, but they're allowing anybody in the state to buy hot food through the end of October.
Listeners, you can find a list of Hurricane Florence active charities to donate to by checking Charity Navigator, which grades established charities based on transparency and financial health. We have a link to that on our page, the Brian Lehrer Show page at WNYC.org, if you want to get there that way. And we thank NPR reporter Brackton Booker, who obviously has been reporting on the storm and was good enough to join us one-on-one for this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.